Hey everyone, welcome back for another deep dive. Today we're going to be tackling the state of global humanitarian crises in 2025. And let me tell you, it's a pretty hefty topic. We've got a lot to cover. We're using the International Rescue Committee's emergency watch list as our main guide for this one.
Okay.
And we've also got a stack of UN reports to kind of round things out. So it's going to be a wild ride, but I think it's an important one. We're basically trying to make sense of a world that feels increasingly, well, out of balance. You know, like imagine a world where the number of people who need emergency aid is larger than the entire population of the U.S.
Wow.
That's the kind of reality we're facing, folks. So we're going to figure out why that is, what it means for all of us, and what, if anything, can be done about it.
It's pretty mind-boggling when you think about it. I mean, the UN is predicting that a staggering 305 million people will need humanitarian aid in 2025. It's a huge number. And it's not just the sheer scale of the need, but the underlying trends that are driving it. The IRC identifies four major imbalances that are kind of pushing us toward this crisis. More conflict, less diplomacy, rising emissions with inadequate support, and a widening gap between the haves and have-nots. Those are some pretty big challenges to tackle.
Yeah, I mean, that's a pretty daunting list. So let's try to break it down one piece at a time. First up, conflict. The IRC report says there's a record 59 active conflicts happening around the world right now.
Right.
That's the highest number since World War II. And we're talking about some really intense situations here. Sudan, Syria, the occupied Palestinian territory. These are places where things are really boiling over. And, you know, it's not exactly a secret that conflict causes a lot of suffering. But what I'm really curious about is the ripple effect, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, how do these conflicts, which often feel really far away, end up impacting the rest of the world?
It's almost like a chain reaction.
Mm-hmm.
Conflict displaces people, disrupts trade, fuels political instability, and all of that has a global impact.
Yeah.
Take Sudan, for example. Their civil war has sparked the largest humanitarian crisis on record. Millions of people have been forced from their homes. But the effects don't stop at Sudan's borders.
Right.
878,000 refugees have fled into South Sudan. And South Sudan's a country that's already struggling with its own set of problems. You know, they've been hit by 5 years of devastating floods, which has crippled their agriculture.
Yeah.
And now millions of people are facing hunger. And this is where it gets really interesting, or I guess I should say really unsettling. These countries that are on the front lines of climate change, they're barely contributing to the problem.
That's what's so crazy about it. They're paying the price for a problem they didn't create. It's a total imbalance.
It is. The report highlights that countries like Sudan and South Sudan, they're bearing the brunt of these climate change impacts. But they contribute less than 4% of global CO2 emissions. So, yeah, it really exposes the kind of global imbalance that's at the heart of this crisis.
And then you've got the funding issue, right? Like, the UN is calling for billions of dollars in aid, but the appeals are only half funded. It's almost like we recognize the problems.
Yeah.
But we lack the will to actually address them. We just don't seem to be stepping up.
Right. And that lack of funding has real consequences.
Yeah.
I mean, aid groups are stretched incredibly thin. They can't reach everyone who needs help, especially in these conflict zones where access is already so limited.
It makes things so much harder.
Exactly. It creates a vicious cycle.
Mm.
Less funding means less aid, which leads to more suffering. And that suffering can often spark further conflict and displacement. So it's all interconnected. It's a huge problem.
Yeah. So it sounds like we've got this web of interconnected challenges, and funding is kind of like one of the key threads that's holding it all together. Okay. So we've laid out some pretty grim realities here, but I don't want to just dwell on the problems, you know? I think we all need a little hope. So in this deep dive, we also want to explore potential solutions. You know, what can actually be done to break this cycle? How do we address these imbalances? Where do we even begin?
The big question.
Yeah.
It is a big question. But I think before we get too far into solutions, we should probably take a closer look at some of the specific countries that are really on the brink.
Okay.
You know, like really teetering on the edge.
Yeah.
The IRC report highlights Sudan as being particularly dire. I mean, they're calling it the largest humanitarian crisis on record, with millions of people displaced by this just brutal civil war.
It's hard to even fathom that, you know? Millions of people caught in this crossfire, just struggling to survive each day. What's the situation like on the ground right now?
Well, the conflict is showing no signs of letting up, unfortunately. The two sides are totally locked in a stalemate, and civilians are bearing the brunt of the violence. It's a dire situation. Food and water are scarce. Hospitals are overwhelmed, and humanitarian aid is just struggling to get through. Imagine having to flee your home, not knowing when you'll eat your next meal or if you'll ever even be able to go back.
Right.
It's a horrific reality for millions of Sudanese people.
And then you've got this added layer of complexity with the crisis spilling over into neighboring South Sudan, which, as we've talked about, is dealing with a whole other set of problems. We talked about those devastating floods earlier. How is that impacting their ability to cope with this huge influx of refugees?
Well, South Sudan was already facing a pretty dire situation even before this wave of refugees. Years of conflict, recurring natural disasters, especially those floods, have left their resources stretched incredibly thin. Now, with nearly a million refugees from Sudan seeking safety within their borders, their capacity to provide aid and support is really at a breaking point. It's a recipe for disaster, to put it bluntly.
It's a desperate situation for sure. And then, to add fuel to the fire, the current peace deal in South Sudan is set to expire in early 2025. It feels like we're watching a slow-motion train wreck about to happen.
Yeah, that's a pretty apt analogy. If the peace deal collapses, as many experts fear it might, the country could very easily slip back into widespread violence.
Yeah.
And when you combine that with the existing humanitarian crisis and the influx of refugees from Sudan, you've got a recipe for a catastrophe of epic proportions. It's really concerning.
Okay, so we've got Sudan and South Sudan, two countries facing some really, really tough challenges. What other countries are sort of flashing red on the IRC's emergency watch list?
Well, Syria is another one that's deeply concerning. After more than a decade of conflict, they were hit by a surprise offensive late last year.
Oh, wow.
Who toppled the government. And now you've got this power vacuum, and the future's incredibly uncertain.
It's hard to believe that things could actually get worse in Syria after everything they've already been through. But is there any progress being made in terms of getting aid to those who need it and starting to rebuild? Like, what's the outlook there?
Well, unfortunately, the situation in Syria remains incredibly fragile.
Okay.
There have been some localized ceasefires, attempts at peace talks, but access for humanitarian aid is still severely restricted, particularly in areas that are controlled by armed groups.
Right.
Millions of Syrians remain displaced, either within the country or as refugees in neighboring countries. The need is overwhelming, and the resources just aren't there to meet it.
Yeah, it's just a tragic situation all around. And then you have Myanmar, which has also seen a lot of conflict and political instability in recent years.
Right.
I mean, it's been really intense there, too.
It has. Myanmar is a really complex case. The military coup back in 2021, that triggered widespread resistance, and the country's been gripped by this brutal civil war ever since. The human rights situation there is absolutely dire. We're seeing reports of widespread abuses by the military junta. It's really bad.
So we're seeing these really intense situations playing out in Sudan, South Sudan, Syria, Myanmar, I mean, all over the place. But as we talked about earlier, these crises don't just stay neatly contained within borders, right? They create ripple effects that impact the entire world. So what are some of the global consequences we could see by mid-2025 if things keep heading in this direction? I mean, what are we really looking at here?
Well, one of the most immediate concerns is a massive surge in refugees.
Okay.
Fleeing conflict and persecution, right? Mm-hmm. Imagine millions of people forced from their homes, desperate for safety and a better life. That puts enormous strain on asylum systems in Europe and other regions.
Yeah. It
could easily lead to political backlash and a hardening of stances on immigration.
Yeah. It's a scenario that we're already starting to see play out in some parts of the world. You know, the fear and anxiety about migration, it's really easy to exploit that for political gain. What else should we be worried about on a global scale?
The food security situation is another major concern.
Okay.
I mean, with so many countries facing severe food shortages, we could very well see a dramatic spike in global food prices.
Right.
Think about the impact that would have on families who are struggling to put food on the table.
Yeah.
Not just in conflict zones, but around the world.
For sure.
This could easily lead to unrest and instability, particularly in countries that rely heavily on food imports. It's a scary thought.
It's like this domino effect, you know, one crisis triggers another, and it creates this ripple that just spreads across the globe.
Exactly. And then, of course, there's the impact on geopolitics. When you have major powers like the U.S., China, and Russia, and they can't agree on how to respond to these crises, it just paralyzes international cooperation.
Right.
So instead of working together to find solutions, we get stuck in this cycle of blame and inaction.
It's like we're all standing on the edge of a cliff, and instead of joining hands to pull each other back, We're arguing about whose fault it is that we're so close to the edge in the first place. It's pretty frustrating.
It is. It's bleak. But unfortunately, it's the reality we're facing. The longer we wait to take action, the harder it's going to be to avert a real disaster.
Okay, so that's a lot of doom and gloom. I think we've all had enough of that for one day.
Right.
So let's shift gears for a moment and talk about solutions. What can we actually do to address the very real and very specific challenges that these countries are facing? How do we pull them back from the brink? Where do we even begin to start tackling these huge problems?
Okay, so we've spent a lot of time in this deep dive laying out all the problems, and it's a lot to process, really.
Right.
But I think we're all ready for a little bit of optimism now. So in this last part, I want to talk about solutions.
Yeah.
I know you've got some thoughts on how we can address these really complex challenges and maybe, just maybe, start tipping the scales back towards some kind of balance.
Yeah, well, you're right. It is easy to get overwhelmed by the sheer scale of these crises.
Yeah, but what's interesting to me is that when those kind of traditional approaches to aid and development start to fall short, that's when we often see this surge in creative problem solving.
Okay.
It's like that old saying, necessity is the mother of invention, right?
Yeah.
And I think we're seeing some really innovative solutions emerge that are giving me at least a little glimmer of hope.
Okay. I'm intrigued. Give me some examples. What are some of these cutting edge ideas that are making you feel optimistic?
Well, one area where we're seeing a lot of innovation is the use of technology in humanitarian response.
Okay.
So imagine using drones to deliver medical supplies to those remote villages in South Sudan.
Wow.
Or using artificial intelligence to predict famine before it even begins.
That would be amazing.
I know, right?
Yeah.
We're even seeing blockchain technology being used to make sure that aid money is being used effectively and transparently.
That's huge.
Yeah. It is. And it's not just about those kind of fancy gadgets either. There's also a growing movement towards what they call community-driven development, where organizations are working directly with those local communities to understand their needs and empower them to create their own solutions.
Okay, so instead of just swooping in with prepackaged solutions from the outside,
right,
it's more about listening to the people who are actually on the ground and supporting their efforts to kind of build a better future for themselves. I like that. It seems like a much more sustainable approach in the long run.
It is. And we're also seeing a shift towards investing in conflict prevention and peace building. Mm-hmm. So rather than just reacting to crises after they've already erupted,
yeah,
we're starting to focus on addressing those root causes of conflict.
Okay.
Things like poverty, inequality, political exclusion, all those underlying factors that contribute to these cycles of violence.
It's about understanding that peace isn't just the absence of war, but the presence of justice and opportunity for everyone.
Exactly.
It's a much more holistic approach.
Right. And then there's this concept of building resilience, which is all about helping communities develop the capacity to bounce back from shocks, whether it's a natural disaster, an economic crisis, political upheaval.
Yeah.
It's about giving people the tools and knowledge they need to not just survive, but to thrive in the face of adversity.
So it's not just about putting out fires, it's about fireproofing the whole house.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, these are all great ideas, but how do we actually put them into action? You know, how do we translate these concepts into real world change? I mean, where do we even start with something this big?
Well, that's the $1 million question, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, first and foremost, we need political will.
Okay.
Governments, international organizations, donors, they all need to step up and commit the resources that are necessary to make these solutions a reality.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds like a pretty tall order, especially in a world where, let's face it, political agendas are often driven by those short-term gains rather than these long-term solutions that we really need.
Yeah, you're not wrong.
It's tough.
It is tough.
Yeah.
But remember, public pressure can be a really powerful force for change.
Right.
When citizens raise their voices and demand action, politicians listen. You know,
they do.
So it's not just about waiting for governments to act. It's about individuals taking action, using their voices and their choices to make a difference.
So it's about everyday people like us stepping up and saying, hey, this matters to me. And I'm not just going to stand by and watch while the world burns.
Yeah.
It's about taking some responsibility.
Right. Exactly. Every single person has a role to play in building a more just and sustainable world. Whether it's supporting those organizations that are working on the front lines, advocating for policy changes, educating yourself and others about these issues, or just making more conscious choices about how you spend your money and your time. We can all be part of the solution.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so we've gone from the depths of despair to, maybe just a glimmer of hope here.
Right.
We've explored the challenges, the potential consequences, and most importantly, I think, some potential solutions. So what's the key takeaway? What do we want listeners to kind of walk away from this deep dive thinking about?
I think the most important message is that while the situation is dire, it's not hopeless.
Yeah.
I truly believe that we have the knowledge, the resources, and the ingenuity to turn things around. It's going to take a collective effort, a willingness to challenge that status quo, and a commitment to building a more equitable and sustainable world.
Yeah.
But I think it's possible, and that's what we need to hold on to, that hope, that belief that we can make a difference.
Well said. And to our listeners, we leave you with this final thought. You are not powerless.
Right.
Your actions, no matter how small they may seem, can contribute to a larger movement for change. Don't underestimate the power of your voice and your choices.
Stay informed, stay engaged, and most importantly, stay hopeful.
Yeah.
The world needs your voice, your passion, your commitment to creating a better future for all.
I love that. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive into the state of global humanitarian crises in 2025. It's been a heavy topic, but hopefully you're walking away with a renewed sense of urgency and maybe, just maybe, a belief that we can collectively make a difference. Until next time, keep learning, keep questioning, and keep fighting for a better world for all of us.